you.
Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal, ma'am?
No, Your Honor, I'm not going to reserve any time. I will probably have some time left over by the time I'm done with my initial argument. But
begin when ready.
All right, thank you. Your Honor, I am here today on behalf of my client, Dwight Delano Moore. We have one issue before the court. Case procedurally comes up on a conditional guilty plea after a suppression hearing. At issue in the suppression hearing, the facts of the case, Your Honor, were that there was a law enforcement attempted to stop Mr. Moore for a tail light. Mr. Moore then did not stop when requested. Officers activated their lights. He then proceeded some short distance, ended up crashing his vehicle, and then running from the vehicle. Left behind in the vehicle, there was a firearm sitting on the floorboard. Mr. Moore was pursued by two officers on foot. A third officer, Officer Groom, arrived on scene where the vehicle remained, and he then took the firearm into...
Counsel, if I might interrupt. Yes. Trial court found exigent circumstances, plain view doctrine, inevitable discovery. Is that correct?
I believe he didn't specifically say, he might have said plain view, but I don't think he said inevitable discovery when he made his ruling. He did specifically talk about exigent circumstances, Your Honor, when making his ruling, indicating that given the fact that the firearm was lying there, that there were other
guest
parties coming up.
He did make his ruling based on exigent circumstance and plain view. Is that correct?
I believe so, Your Honor.
All right. And your petition for appeal only talks about exigent circumstances. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So where does that leave you? The plain view, his ruling on plain view isn't challenged.
That is correct, Your Honor. Your Honor, while the officer was still able to see the firearm, I don't believe there was probable cause to actually seize it, because at that point the officer had no way of knowing whether or not it was involved in a crime, no reason to believe that it had been involved in a crime. At that point, the officer didn't know that Mr. Moore was a convicted felon. The officer had no information that there had been a recent shooting.
That he fled from, he literally left it as it was still moving, and then as soon as he leaves it, he leaves the door open and he crashes it, the car crashes into two other vehicles, and he's being pursued.
Yes, sir.
And Officer Groom is the only officer who arrives at the car while others are pursuing him. Why, at that point, doesn't the officer actually have a responsibility to make sure there's a crowd gathering around the car because it's crashed into two other cars, for officer safety and for crowd safety to protect the public? Why doesn't the officer have a duty under exigent circumstances to take that gun and put it in safekeeping?
Well, there are other ways that the officer could have secured the weapon. He could have set a perimeter, order people to stay back.
There's only one of him, remember?
I understand there is only one of them, but certainly he could have ordered the bystanders or the looky-loos who are coming out to stay clear of the vehicle. He could have shut the door so nobody could go inside the vehicle. That would have been a very simple matter, closing the door.
And again, I appreciate your response, but things that he could have done do not necessarily negate the constitutionality of what he did do.
Yes, Your Honor. I do understand that, but I think there was a less invasive way that he could have secured the weapon and ensured the safety of the public, as opposed to entering the vehicle, seizing the weapon, without having first obtained a warrant. At that point, he didn't need to secure it because he was going to be leaving the scene. Two other officers were already in pursuit of Moore. He was able and available to stay put, and he did stay put with the vehicle, and I believe other officers were coming very shortly thereafter.
But they don't know where Mr. Moore is at that point. He may have circled back around and come back to the car where he could have obtained his firearm.
Well, I mean, I guess the answer to that is they don't know where he is. He's not in view anywhere. I think Officer Groom did testify he couldn't see any of the other two officers or Mr. Moore. So certainly he wasn't in visual range. So if that had become an issue, if Mr. Moore did circle around and he saw him coming, trying to reaccess the vehicle and then get to the firearm, Mr. Officer Groom could have taken further steps at that point.
He's got a whole bunch of people he's got to watch there, too, who he's got to keep safe, in addition to himself. And presumably, he doesn't know if any of them or the appellant here, who he hasn't seen yet, right, could reappear along with others in the crowd, and you've got a firearm sitting right there.
Well, Your Honor, from the testimony, it appeared that these are just mere curiosity individuals who are coming out of curiosity, see what's going on. It doesn't appear that there was no testimony that they were rowdy or uncooperative, in a situation where the officer may feel that he is in danger from the other individuals present or that they are going to cause any issues. So I don't think that just for the fact that there were other bystanders by, that in and of itself necessitates him actually taking possession of the
firearm. Does the record show that some of them were young, too, though? That you had some who were not necessarily of majority age?
I don't recall if there was testimony as to the age of the parties.
Let me ask you another question, following up on something that Judge Frank offered earlier. You have preserved the issue of exigent circumstances, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. But you didn't preserve plain view.
I did not address plain view, no.
If both of those circumstances are exceptions to the warrantless requirement under the Fourth Amendment, if there is a valid basis for the search to occur and you haven't preserved the plain view, do we not have any basis for reversing the conviction?
If plain view is a valid exception, Your Honor, I would say that because I have not addressed plain view, I don't know that you do have grounds to reverse.
We're sort of stuck. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. I appreciate your candor, counsel.
Thank you.
All right. You may begin when ready, ma'am.
May it please the court, Brittany Dunperio for the Commonwealth. So Moore only raised on appeal the issue of exigent circumstances. So as a result, he's failed to address the trial court's alternate rulings, and at this point, those can't be addressed now. The motion to suppress...
Are you aware of any way for us to get to those issues without them being preserved?
No. The motion to suppress was properly denied because Moore did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the car after he abandoned it.
Was there any argument about standing, or did the trial court rule on standing?
I don't believe the trial court ruled on standing, but I do know that the Commonwealth did raise it. I don't remember what the trial court did with that.
I can tell you they didn't address standing.
Okay. But in this case, there is no standing. There's no possessory interest in the vehicle because it was abandoned, the door was opened, and the defendant had fled. And also, there's denial of ownership.
Factual findings, though, did the trial court make regarding abandonment? I mean, wouldn't we, if we went that route, have to make some additional factual findings on appeal?
We can't make it from this record. You would agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But.
And we're usually not in the business of making factual determinations except in very extraordinary cases.
Okay. Well, this case is similar to other cases though, that do address the issue of abandonment. And here the facts are that the police initiated a traffic stop. Moore continued to drive, ignoring the police. Eventually, he jumped out of the driver's seat, leaving the driver's door open and the motor running, and ultimately the car did crash into two parked cars.
Counsel, so your opponent colleague has, and I appreciate her candor in this, that's what professionals do, she's conceded that the issue of exigent circumstances is the only issue that is before this court. But she, based upon the look on her face, was like thinking, well, maybe plain view should have been preserved also. Are we able to get to a plain view analysis based upon, because of the constitutional nature of the issues that we're dealing with here, under an ends of justice analysis?
The question is, are we able to address plain view now?
Yes.
No, I don't think we can under ends of justice analysis, but I also think that the facts in this case prove that there was probable cause to believe that the gun was contraband, so it's also without merit. This is a situation in which, again, the driver was driving a car. After the police tried to pull him over, he jumped out of the car, it crashed, and then the police car that had been following him left their lights and sirens going because they had to jump out of the car and run after him, and all of this occurred at night. And I think that furtive, like that conduct of fleeing, shows that the police did have probable cause to believe that the gun was contraband in this case.
Gotcha.
Additionally, there's other ways in which the motion was still could have been properly denied. There's inevitable discovery, which the Commonwealth argued at the motion to suppress.
You don't necessarily need that as long as the plain view analysis suffices.
Yes, but there was inevitable discovery due to the canine sniff of the car.
Presumably, if the car had to be towed because it's ended up in an accident, there's no one else in it who can drive it away, so it's going to have to be searched
inventory
prior
search.
To it.
Yes.
And an impoundment of it.
Yeah, a lawful inventory search as well, which would have been another inevitable discovery.
But if we were to decide it based on either plain view or exigent circumstances or a combination thereof, we wouldn't need to get to inevitable discovery.
No, we would not. No. And then on exigent circumstances, one of the ones that's listed in the Vera's case is the possibility of dangers to others, including police officers left to guard the site. And in this case, there was only one police officer at the site. There was a crowd forming around a crime scene, and there was a gun completely visible on the floorboard of the driver's seat. The front door of the car was open. It was easily accessible. The police officer had no idea if it was loaded, and so in order to protect other people and protect the safety of the officer, he acted very reasonable by only seizing the gun and not searching the rest of the car in order to keep everyone safe. So
Ms. Wentworth argues that he could have secured it other ways, such as closing the door, I guess, locking it, but of course if he locks it from the inside, he may not be able to get back in.
Right. So there may have been other reasonable ways for the police officer to act in this situation, but that doesn't mean that what the police officer did wasn't reasonable. All he did was see that there was a gun, take it for safekeeping and put it in his car and just wait there until other officers arrived on the scene. So if there are no further questions, I ask that the court affirm the trial court's judgment.
Thank you, ma'am. Counsel, you have a little bit more time left. Did you want to take advantage of it?
No, Your Honor, I think I'll submit it on my brief.
Thank you. We'll come down to Greek Council.